Okay, well, I think we might kick off. It is 12:30, so I'd like to welcome everybody around the table and also all those who are online. This is the first of these of this type of session that we've ever held. So, and I'm trying to nice kindly say she thought it was a great initiative. Actually, she said it was a great session, and I said, well, you should wait till after the end to say that. She said, no, it's a great initiative, and we'll get feedback on the content at the end. So the purpose of the session is really to encourage members who might be interested on being on council, to encourage them to sort of think about that and to sort of let people know what council does and what's involved in being on council. So we're going to sort of do this in sort of four broad sections, and happy to take comments and questions on the way through, of course. First is just going over a little bit what the role of council is. So it's not going to be a lesson on governance, but just sort of outlining what the role of council is with the Institute. Then I'm going to ask the current members of council who are here or online to reflect on their experiences of being on council. We've come up with, well, only three frequently asked questions that we'll sort of talk to, and that might sort of lead people to ask other questions about what's involved. And then finally, a little bit of sort of housekeeping, going through details of the nomination and election process. So I'll just sort of kick off talking about what the role of council is. So council is the governing body of the Institute, and it's a board of directors as well as being a council. So it's got obligations under the Corporations Act as well as the requirements of the Constitution to meet. And I guess as the directors, council's responsible for, well, and under the Constitution as well, council's responsible for all aspects of the operation of the Institute. And you can think about that really being in two parts, one on performance and one on compliance. And however, you know, I guess that the board doesn't do everything, so the board delegates and the council delegates the day-to-day functions and activities to the management under David, and also to various committees as well. But those delegations are reported back on to council, and obviously council has to make sure it has an oversight system in place that it can sort of have those, monitor those delegations. And also council is accountable to the membership. So a couple of things I think are worth sort of drawing out. The council's a decision-making body, so much of the work on particular issues is done by management or done by committees, and then council gets papers and takes decisions about things. We've got a number of council committees, the Audit Risk Committee, the HR Remuneration Committee, the Nominations Committee, also Education Committee, Public Policy Committee, Research Council Committee, and International Council Committee. So there's a number of council committees. So I should add the Presidential Committee also. And then there's all the practice committees, and then there may be task forces and working groups who also might report through and back into council in some way. So there's a lot of reporting back and decision-making to be done. I quite like this sort of chart, or I think it's called the Finkler. I can't remember what it's called now. The Finkler
model.
It's from the AICD course on the role of the board, just to sort of give you an idea about sort of the areas that the board gets involved in. So you can sort of say, as I said, the board's involved in and responsible for compliance and performance. And you can sort of break that down into thinking about external and internal roles, and also focus on the present and the past and the future orientation. And I think, and under the Finkler model, you know, the suggestion is that the board should spend about the same amount of time in each of those quadrants rather than just being purely compliance focused. So you need to get enough performance focus as well. You need to have enough external and internal. So just to sort of run through what the roles are, well, the board sets the strategic direction for the organisation. So that's an external forward-looking role. They also set the strategy for internal performance through policy setting. So we have a large number of policies that we set about, which is sort of a framework within which the Institute operates. So having delegated authority, we have to be clear about, you know, the boundaries in how that authority can be exercised. On the compliance side, the board monitors performance and monitors risk, and also provides accountability back to the members. So that's through the financial statements, but also we report back to the members on our progress towards various of the objectives. So, and I guess the council sort of needs to spend time on each of those elements to ensure that we get the right sort of balance. So this was a visualisation using the words that have appeared, I think, on council agendas for the last 3 years or something like that, I think Anne did it. So she sort of pulled out the words that have been on the agenda and the agenda items, and the bigger ones are the ones, you know, where we've had been on the agenda the most, etc. But you can see that what's on the council agenda really is sort of what the Institute's business is. So education is obviously a key one that we talk about quite a lot, including, and that includes CPD. Members and service to members, not surprisingly, that's got such a prominent role. Public policy, the Institute's finances, and professional standards. So those are sort of all in there, and then you can see sort of Asia and international and some of the sort of the subtleties that we've discussed. But, you know, if you think about those broad things, those are the areas of operation of the Institute: education, member services, public policy, professional standards. So that's my sort of little background to what the council is and the role of the council and what we sort of spend our time doing. So I'm going to now ask the council members who are here just to reflect on their own personal experiences of being on council. I don't know who wants to take the lead. Ladies first.
Why not? Thank you. And then, okay, so what I've enjoyed being on council, I find that I've been fairly involved with the Institute for many years, from a work perspective as well. So I've had a lot of involvement with committees, but getting to actually see how it all hangs together is something that's been interesting to me on council. I think just generally in terms of skills that it helps you develop, it's developing those skills beyond the more technical skills. Obviously there are committees where you have a technical approach, but on council you need to work with a range of different people who are coming from different backgrounds and learn how to work with them and how to develop your influencing skills, how to work collaboratively with them, and that some of the work that needs to be done might be taken outside of the council meeting in terms of meeting with people, understanding what's happening, and really diving into the information. So I think the other thing that I'll just say from a sort of from individual's personal development point of view, it is a way of developing skills which could lead you to taking a role on other boards in a fairly friendly and kind of atmosphere, in that it's quite supportive. I think that you have the HQ who are there to work with you, and because we have a large volunteer base, lots of people know each other well, so you're working with people who are, I guess, supportive of the way we're going, what we're trying to do. Donna, thank you.
Hi, my name is Chow. I'm a young actuary. This is my first year on council. I'm really enjoying it. I think the experience is mostly about the strategy and coming up with the Institute strategy and looking after the strategy. Coming from a young person's perspective, there are issues that young members are particularly concerned about. So things like, for example, practice areas, expanding into new areas, and education, and the opportunity to, I guess, represent the views of the membership on council is a really valuable one.
So Peter.
Hi, I'm Peter. I'm in my second term of council. I spent some time on council in the 1990s for about 3 years, and I'm now in my third year of another 4-year term, having been elected in 2012. I think the observation I'd make most obviously, being on council, you see the world through a different perspective entirely. It's quite different being a director of a public company than managing even a large organisation. When you're managing an organisation, you take direction and you're focused, and the objective is to build a team that pursues and executes the policy. When you're on the other side of that line as a director, you have a very serious legal obligations to bring an independent mind, to ask difficult questions, to probe, and in fact, you know, management likes to see everything happening smoothly. The job of the director, in some ways, is to hold them accountable and to challenge and to look and ask the questions that people don't want to be asked, and that requires a very different mindset from being a manager. Many actuaries too tend, by virtue of their innate character and their training, to focus on detail. You just can't do that on the board of directors. There's just too much in an organisation to look at the detail. As Estelle said, you have to delegate and get reports back. But the most important aspect of strategy is not how you do things. It's not getting all the T's crossed and all the I's dotted. It's choosing the right things to do. And you can do the wrong things absolutely perfectly, and that's terrible. If you choose the right things to do, even if you don't do them brilliantly, the organisation benefits from that. So it's necessary to have a degree of distance, independence, questioning mind, and to sit back from your own specialty and to observe that if you're in life insurance, or if you're in data analytics, or if you're in health area or something like that, you might know a lot about that, but when you're on council, you've got to deal with that within the big picture. And that ability, those abilities, those personal qualities, to stand back from your area of expertise, to listen closely, to challenge, to question, and so on. All of those skills are absolutely fundamental to doing the job well. And if I was to say, criticise the council at all, it would be that a lot of people do come onto council who are looking to advance their careers or they've got particular interests and so on, and we do not get enough of our members who actually have experience at the board level and actually have experience in seeing the world in that way coming on to council. Now, sometimes after they've been there a while and things have gone wrong a bit in some area or other, they learn those things. But the Institute, I think, if any people listening to this or any people in our membership can bring experience in that area to the council, I think the council and the Institute would benefit hugely from that. So those are my observations.
Thank you. I'm not sure, is there any way for the councillors who are online to participate in this? Or
yeah, they can email through if they've got any comments, or anyone on the webinar can email through questions, so I'll keep an eye on it and
okay.
Shout out if anything comes
through. All right, thank you. We also got some, we did a member survey, I think, last year, for those members who had been on council at some point or were current council members, I think these are the things that they raised as being what they got out of being on council. So interactions with other actuaries who they wouldn't normally meet. Exposure to the inner workings of the Institute. I think, Jenny, you sort of mentioned that. Gaining experience of being on a board. And you know, I guess some people come to the council with board experience, others don't, as Peter says. The possibility of taking developments in a particular practice area, advocating for a practice area or geographic location, making sure that we're not Sydney-centric, or you know, that we're not overly focused on one practice area or one location. A lot of councillors come on interested in education. I've read that wrongly. Being made aware, sort of broadening out, understanding other practice areas, and a chance to put something back into the institute. I will also add a lot of councillors are very interested in their education. For me, I think I found that the things that I have enjoyed being on council, being broadening my interests, so becoming interested in things outside of my area, taking a broader approach, thinking about things outside of Australia. I certainly know it's led to me reading a lot more. It's very easy to get focused in on your particular area and what you're interested in, and it certainly does mean that you. I see headlines now in the paper on retirement income, so I thought, I really want to read that. That's a really interesting article. And, some of those areas as well are incredibly important for our community and our society. And so it's certainly, I've enjoyed that. I think getting to know more actuaries, I've definitely enjoyed that. And that's not just through the council, that's obviously also through the committees and through going to events. And when you're on council, I guess people do come up to you more because they sort of want to raise things with you and find out what's going on in council, maybe raise things that they think that should come to the council's attention. And I also found getting board experience really useful. I mean, I had reported to a lot of boards myself and been in front of boards and seen boards in operation, but I hadn't sort of been on a board. So I certainly found that was sort of really a useful experience for me. So I might get on to the frequently asked questions, the three frequently asked questions, just to kick things off, and then hopefully we can sort of have some questions from people who are here. So how do I balance my work and other commitments with being on council? So obviously everybody's got, or most people have got, full-time commitments, either work commitments or family or personal commitments. And so it is a matter of setting aside some time and providing some priority for the work on council. There are four council meetings a year at the moment, although at the September meeting we are having a discussion around what the right number of council meetings is a year. It used to be six, but it's been four council meetings for the last few years. Obviously, you need to read and prepare for those council meetings, and the council papers do run to the few hundred pages, so there is some reading to do. On top of that, I've been on council, so it's my fifth year now on the council. We've had one to three full-day meetings on special topics. So last year we had three. We had one day on Asia, and we had 2 days later in the year on sort of the more general strategic direction of the Institute. We do kind of have an expectation that council members will also sit on some committees as well. But there's three committees, the HR and REM, ARC, the Audit Risk Council Committee and Nomination Committee, where it's preferable to have council members or a majority of council members on those committees. But also council members sit on other committees and sort of have a liaison role to those other committees in a sort of a more formal sense. And then there's also sometimes we'll set up task forces or particular groups to look at particular issues, and council members will sit on that. So that's sort of the work that's involved. And I guess so it's not I didn't find it to be overly demanding, but obviously it does require you to want to and be able to set aside, time to do those things. And I would say with the council meetings, there's always they're set at the start of the year, so you sort of know when those are coming up, so you can plan for it. Is there anything else I should say? Anyone want to ask anything around work and commitments or what I've said on that, or add anything from the council?
Yeah, I'd like to come in. I don't think the third bullet point's a problem at all. And in fact, I think it's desirable that people come onto council out from outside Sydney. It's very easy for it just to focus on the profession here in Sydney. And we are trying, in particular, to reflect a membership which is much broader And council does support it. I mean, it is, there are practical difficulties. I mean, we've got a member at the moment who lives in Singapore, so he has to fly here, get permission from his employer and so on to take time. But we certainly need people from Melbourne, I think. We do have people on council, but if that stopped, I think it would be a shame. The other two, I think, are problematic. If you do have a very demanding work job, I think council is difficult. Many of the large employers see it as important having someone on their staff on the council. I think that creates issues at times. But this idea that, you know, there are conflicts, if you like, to put it bluntly, which can be problematic. But on the other hand, there's a view, especially among the younger members, that older members of the institute should not dominate the council. There have been different views over the years. I've been a member now for 40 years of the institute here. The views about that have varied a lot over time, and depends who you ask. And as people get older, they tend to become more supportive of the idea of older people being on the council, and I'm in that category, I guess. But when I was young, this challenge, I was very keen for young people to be on the council too. So if you don't have a board background, I've already commented on that. Look, you do learn from being on council, but it takes a while, you know, and you can make a contribution. But also, there's also a need on council, I think, for people with experience, and certainly life experience and a sense of independence, and not the desire to get approval by not asking difficult questions or probing areas you shouldn't probe, or challenging people who are not being as accountable as you'd like them to be. You know, you need some experience and some maturity and strength, personal strength, to be able to do those things well. So those have been my comments about those.
Okay, so so you've gone through all of them. I might sort of just, if I can, just go back to the second one and talk about board background or experience. I think I'd echo some of Peter's comments. I think, from my viewpoint, I think it's important to get diversity, obviously, on council. Now, obviously, because it's an elected process, that's not engineered in the way that a professional board sort of selects directors and sort of tries to ensure through the selection process that they get a diversity. So with us, it's an election process. So that's why it's kind of, we always find it's important to have a range of candidates standing for election. But yes, certainly I think a diversity of background is important. You do need a certain amount of experience. Because, as Peter says, you know, you do need the experience to be able to, you know, apply that around the board table in a way. Well, I don't know whether I'd really so much put it like that, but just apply that around thing about having, you know, having the experience to add insight into a debate, to be able to see when to challenge things. I think it's important to be a listener as well as a speaker. Obviously, you know, you've got to listen to what everybody has to say, as well as speaking up in terms of your own points of view. So, yes, I think experience is important, but you don't necessarily have to have board experience. And at the moment, we've got a combination of people on the board, on the council. So I think we've got several councillors who've got quite a lot of board experience, and we've got some other councillors where this is sort of their first board, including myself. This is my first board. Apart from the Affinity board, which I'll say doesn't count from this perspective, because I'm the executive director of that. So, yeah, this is my first board, and I've certainly, you know, found that, yes, there was a bit of a learning curve, but there is some assistance that the Institute provides as well in terms of going to an Australian Institute of Company Director course to sort of understand what the duties and obligations are of a director. And I'd also echo Peter's thoughts around an inquiring and curious mind being important, and independence of thought being important. You know, you're sitting on council for all the members, not the members who, you know, you know, or the ones who are in your sort of practice area, you know, you're having to represent all of them. So has anyone else got anything to say just on that topic of being on, having a board background, or maybe any of the people who've come along about whether that's been a concern for them or?
We've just got a couple of comments from the councillors on the webinar. So Andy Yang, who's based in Hong Kong, has sent through that he's found being on council is a really useful experience. He says he understands how governance works, especially in Australian context, much better, and that he can apply that to his work. He can advocate for Asian members, but also as much as any councillor would on behalf of all members. And he said that, just a comment, being in Asia, he does fly to Sydney for council meetings because he thinks it's better with the face-to-face.
I know, Alan is great at doing that, and he was on the phone, I think, at the last council meeting, which I think was, you know, more difficult for the rest of the council, for Andy, so we much prefer it when he's here. And there's another...
Yeah, so Andrew Brown's also emailed in. So he said that three things that he values about being on council. One is the real opportunity to make a contribution to the profession and to help shape the direction, in particular support in the new strategic plan and strategic direction. The second one is fantastic opportunity to broaden my perspective and to learn from the wisdom across the profession. And number three is the opportunity to deepen understanding and appreciation of board role and what it takes to be an effective director.
Right, okay. And so obviously both Andy and Andrew are part of our board who doesn't live in Sydney, and at the moment we have, we'll get this right, two council members who are based in Melbourne, so Lisa Simpson and Andrew Brown, and Andy Yang, who's based in
Hong Kong. I thought he lived in Singapore.
I think he did, and now he's in Hong Kong.
Okay.
So, and I think all the time I've been on council, we've had maybe at least two people who've been outside of Sydney. So mostly Melbourne. I think Andy, it's more unusual for us to have someone based in Asia on council, but obviously that again helps to ensure that we have diversity.
The last president, Dan Smith, was from Melbourne.
Yeah. Any?
Just on the second point, I'm a sort of a young member. I don't have a board background. I have a bit of experience, much less than the other people on the board, but I hope I've made a minimal contribution this year. I think the important thing is to have, I guess, always think that you're a representative of the members, and experience on other representative bodies would help you in performing your role as a board member on the Institute very well.
Do we have any questions from people who are here?
This is Estelle, it's Trang Duncanson. UCIT is a decision-making body, and I can imagine you must have lots of strong opinions, you know, after reading through the 200-300 pages every quarter. I was just wondering, within your council meetings, how do you decide as a body what to do afterwards, and then how do you follow up on those things, during the year?
Okay, well, decisions by the council are ultimately taken at a vote. And it's a simple majority vote. Although obviously we do, and there's 12 people on council, so obviously when we're having the decision, we're always trying to, come to something that everybody agrees with. That's not always possible, however. Certainly I find myself as chair that I often try and feel like my role is to ensure that the different arguments and points of view are reflected. And to the extent that we can build consensus, we do, but at times we can't, and then we'll sort of come down to a vote, and it's a majority vote. In terms...
I was going to comment on that, but when you finish,
I was just going to... The second part is in the follow-up. So that's... that once we've taken a decision on something, that often gets handed to David, and the management to deal with. It might go to a committee, and then that committee or management will come back to council having done further work, or if we resolve that we are going to take a particular action or move in a certain direction.
Okay, thank you. Yes.
Steve Jobs talks about this, and he has a metaphor for getting all sorts of rough hewn bits of rock and putting them in a barrel and attaching an electric motor to them and rotating them for a large period of time. And you get a lot of noise, a lot of sparks, a lot of abrasion goes on. And he talks about a good idea being translated into a fantastic outcome as going through that metaphor. He sees the decision-making process in a board of directors as rather like that barrel grinding away at those rocks. And at the end of the day, when you open it up, you have these beautiful, smooth, attractive jewels, right? And an essential part of the board is the variety of views and opinions and experiences that people bring to it. And it's really important to have a process with a degree of abrasion and a sparks and whatever. That process is absolutely a crucial part of the process. That's the right place for it to happen, is at the board, because the board comes to a decision by one way or another, maybe a vote, but my experience is very rarely comes to a vote. Generally speaking, the process that Estelle does herself, and many chair people do this, so not all, is to allow that process of abrasion, if you like, and rubbing ideas together until you find something that most of the people on the board can live with. And that's particularly true with contracts. Most decisions are easy. You know, it's a policy that you just rubber stamp, everybody's comfortable with it. When you make big decisions, spending large amounts of money on strategic initiatives, I mean, the most recent one you might all be familiar with was that no grey areas issue. It was controversial with the members. In that, this process of grinding away, bashing heads together, having sparks and all of that stuff, and eventually out of that comes the smooth whatever. That's the Steve Jobs process. That is the function of a board of directors, and a good chair facilitates that function. And out of that, you get decisions people can live with. I might say the most successful major decision that the board recently made at the Institute was our new strategic plan, which this process happened over a period of days. The board sat down at least for two full days, and it was facilitated very well, and everybody put into the pot. The outcome was nobody's idea. It was a collective process from all of the members, and I actually think everybody got buy-in to that. And when Estelle presented it to the members, I think the members too gave a very positive feedback. But that involved shedding some of the things that we do and focusing on a few things that we think we can do well with good reasons and so on. It was a great process, and we've got a good outcome. So that's the process whereby decision-making happens, I think, or good decision-making does.
Estelle, can I ask a
question? Yeah.
So Scott Reeves, actually, it's a question for any councillors who wish to answer. What opportunities did you take were you given to get across the environment and issues from some of the other practice areas? So, you know, being in general insurance, it'd be fascinating to say, okay, well, I need to obviously understand what life and health and super are facing at the moment. How did you come across those issues?
I think that you get some and certainly everything's made available to you. So if you wanted to attend meetings, I think that would be quite acceptable to talk to people and find out what was happening. There is an orientation process, an issue which is more about how the board operates than particularly getting across issues. Quite a lot of the board issues are not very practice area specific. They're at a higher level than that, a much more policy point of view rather than needing to know the detail. And I mean, the council relies a lot on the practice committees to provide the expertise there. So it is about delegating authority to others. But people are always open to talking to you if you had information you needed, then HQ would make that available.
So we're doing a few things at the moment. So for at the moment, we're putting together a new risk register, and that does reflect the more serious risks come up from the practice committees as well as from an operational perspective. So from a board perspective, on those, you know, big picture risks is obviously important. And we have there's a cross practice committee now that meets
four times a year.
And the chair of that rotates, and so we're getting the last chair of the cross practice committee to come to council meetings to sort of as part of that reporting back. So it's a combination of things that are available to you and also the reporting back of the International Council Committee comes, the Education Council Committee comes, but now we'll have the cross practice committee here, and because the chair rotates, we'll get that input. But I also think the risk register is an important part of that as well, so that if there are big risks to the profession emerging from one of the practice areas, there's good visibility of that at board level.
I think the other thing is, as a representative, in your daily communications with members, the issues that come through different practice areas are all very similar. And there are some issues that affect one practice area more than others, and it generally comes across to you that that's an area that we need to focus on. So, for example, in a banking practice area, I'm not a banking actuary, I do a bit of banking, but through the communication with members, you can feel that, you know, education, influence, engagement with the membership, those are the issues that we need to deal with.
Any questions? Are we getting any questions on?
Yeah, I've got one question on the webinar. So this is going back to the participation from people in other places on council.
Mm-hmm.
So Vicky Appleton has asked if the regular meetings, as well as any day sessions for special topics such as this insights, is it an expectation that the member will travel to Sydney? So we touched on that it does happen. But is it expected?
Yes, I think it is expected, and the Institute pays travel costs for that. I think it's just difficult to make the contribution if you're on phone. So I would sort of say, you know, if we've got four council meetings a year, it's great if someone who's not based in Sydney can be here for three of them at least. I mean, if they're not here for one meeting or whatever, that's obviously fine, but yeah, it is, and maybe I don't know whether maybe Andrew or I think Andy already commented that he finds it very useful to come to Sydney from Hong Kong for the meetings. I'm sure Andrew would say the same thing.
I've also just got another email from Lindsay. So he's commenting on his experience as a counsellor. So he said that he gets the opportunity to contribute across the full range of the Institute's business, having key involvement in the Institute's strategy and working at board level, opportunity to progress and nurture the reputation of our profession. It's voluntary and I see it as a privilege to serve the members and to look after their interests. Working closely with other councillors and management on the business of our members and meeting and interacting with a wide range of members and stakeholders and learning from them.
Okay. No other questions? David, would you?
Well, I'll take 30 seconds. It's often said the CEO is the sole employee of the council, so I have 12 people looking at me all the time and I'm in front of council meetings, but seriously, from a management point of view, it's critical for me and my team that we do have an inquiring and challenging council. It certainly helps us because we will often put things to council from our perspective and not necessarily have taken account of other factors. So we do welcome a challenging and inquiring council, and if it was to be anything else, I think it would make our job much more harder. That's probably the observation I'd make.
Okay, so I might just move on then to the more, just the details of this year's elections for those who are thinking of standing. So the key dates for this year are 21st of September, nominations open. At 14th of October, nominations close. Voting starts on the 2nd of November and closes on the 2nd of December. And we will be trying, I think, to encourage members to vote and engage with the election process, try some different things to get more members involved with the election process than we maybe all have. You know, obviously, voting isn't compulsory, so we do want to, if possible, improve the proportion of members who do vote. There are six steps to nominating, which are set out in a combination of the constitution and also the rules for elections that council's able to make. So your application form needs to be signed by three fellows. Now, is there anyone who can't sign your application form? A member of the nominations committee.
I think that's it.
Yes. So if you're applying, a member of the nominations committee can't sign your application form. I'd encourage people who are going to nominate to think carefully about who you ask to nominate you. Certainly I know when members are looking to vote for people, if they don't know you, they tend to look at who's nominated you, and that might be an indication to them. They might vote on those lines. So it is an important thing to think about. You have to provide certain details, and we ask you to sign a probity declaration. It's optional, but I'd highly encourage people to write a statement about the reasons that you're standing for election and what objectives you have. That's certainly, as I say, we used to be a much smaller profession. We're now a profession with 2,500 fellows,
yes,
voting members, so it's very unlikely that you know all of those 2,499 other people who aren't yourself. So, you know, writing about the reasons that you're standing and a bit about yourself, I think is helpful for people to take decisions. Another optional thing is people doing a video. And Chow, you did a video, didn't you, last year? I might ask you to speak about that because I did do one. So did you do it yourself or did the Institute?
Yeah, I did it myself, but I would imagine it's the same thing. You just find a white background, like a wall in your home, and then you just have an iPhone or whatever. You have a speech about why you want to join council, a short, succinct, clear message to the members. In terms of the effects, it's quite basic. It's just you talking to a camera. So it's very,
Did you get any feedback on it?
Yeah, I think people liked
it. It's not necessary, though. Some people who do videos did not get elected,
yeah,
and some people got elected who did not do videos.
That's
so,
right.
So it's not a necessary component.
It's not necessary. It's an optional thing for people. And I can't remember last year how many people did videos.
I think about half.
Yeah. So it's a more recent thing. Back in the day when I got elected, anyone did a video. But yeah, it's something that's being done more. But definitely the foot that set for sort of writing a good piece around why you want to be on council, I think is really useful. And we do ask for a picture, a professional picture, not
a picture of your cat.
Not a picture, not your Facebook page picture. There's more information about standing on for council available on the website. So you go to our website, click on About Us, and then Council. And there's a booklet.
There is a booklet.
Called Leading Your Profession.
It should be here.
Yeah, we have plenty.
What about the people
who want that?
And the people who are...
Yes, they all have it. They would have received it with their slides.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Now, there are 12 positions on council. That's the target size for council in the constitution. Only one position will become vacant in 2016, and that's me. That's my chair. And up to three will become vacant in 2017. And why I say up to three is that it depends who stands for and gets elected as vice president on whether people move off council at the moment. And that's one of the things that when we had the governance task force last year, one of the recommendations of that was a couple of things to reduce the size of the council and to sort of have a process where you sort of get the same number of positions coming up each year so you don't get lumpiness. But we get to bring those sort of recommendations to or council hasn't sort of come up yet with a position on that to take to members. So, yeah, there's unfortunately only one position vacant this year, but up to three in 2017.
And that's all that I have. Are there any other thoughts or comments?
Did you mention how long the term is?
I didn't. The term is for 4 years.
Again, that was something in the governance review, that the recommendation was to reduce that to 3 years. So I can talk about that. So again, I mean, anything in the governance review may or may not happen, and it won't happen for this year. And so it won't affect anything in terms of this year's elections. It may happen next year, and if it does, then it obviously will affect elections for next year. But at the moment, they're 4-year terms. And once you're off council, you have to be off for a year, and then you can re-stand.
But that's under a new term, isn't it?
That's under a new term. That's right.
And once you're off council, do you get like a pension for life? Like,
well, I think that there's a proposal to the next meeting for that one person who's leaving at the
end. And helicopters. Talk about the helicopters.
That's right. Thank you. The helicopter expenditure, yes, of course. No, you just get the satisfaction of having served your profession, and you usually end up on about three other committees and ongoing for life.
You also get a photograph and a place on the wall. And if you're really lucky, a meeting room named after you in 50 years' time.
Only if you've been president.
Oh, true.
You don't get photo.
I'll think of you as that.
Any other thoughts? Okay, well, hopefully that's the mysteries of council have been sort of taken away today. And, look, I encourage everybody to stand this year or next year or at some time when it makes sense for you. If you feel that you've got the time and that, you've got the sort of the right kind of approach and personality that you feel that it's something in a place where you can make a contribution. I would say if you decide that council isn't the place for you to make a contribution to the Institute, there are many, many other ways to make a contribution, and I know that a number of you here and on the webinar already do make that contribution, so it's not the only place, obviously, for people to contribute. Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.